As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Want to talk about a new movie? Check. Want to talk about an older movie similar or related to that new movie?
Check.
That's what you can expect from Quality Check Podcast.
It's a new podcast on the Studio DNA Network, hosted by yours truly, Drew Douglas and
Daniel Posey. Every other Tuesday, we'll talk about a new movie and an old movie to see how the film's quality holds up.
Live from a bunker in the heart of the Ozarks. Some podcasts are good, some podcasts are bad, but this one is a rare gift. It's SIFPOP.
Welcome to SIFPOP Weekly, streaming live most weekends. We're available to download later in your podcast feed, unless, of course, you're a patron.
Patrons get perks!
Patrons get those perks.
Woo!
I'm your host, Aaron Dicer, and there are certain moments that never leave you, like the moment I first met him. It's Andrew Ormsby, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey, we played poker.
That's right. We met at a poker game. That is true.
Yeah.
Each week, we'll chat about movies, television, and whatever else from the pop culture universe is on our minds. And please welcome our guest this week. These are the best circumstances you'll ever see him in. It's Ian Whittington, ladies and gentlemen.
Yay. Woo! Little bit sad that you didn't give me a memory thing, but that's fine. That was
hey,
pretty
listen,
good.
I've got a limited number of things to work with here. Limited number.
Yeah.
Welcome back, Ian. How are you?
Thank you for having me. I'm good. I am smashing.
Yeah? brilliant? Are you brilliant?
Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, good. Good. That's wonderful. We had a great time talking about what TV we're watching right now in our members only pre-show. That was a lot of fun. It was kind of cool to hear what you guys are watching, and especially Ian, with you kind of being over on the other side of the ocean, you know, kind of what
you're having no idea what either of you were talking about at all. Just like, are we TV? Yeah, cool. I couldn't even guess the genre for most of them.
Right. So that will be in your SIFPOP member feed. If you are a SIFPOP member, you can listen to that conversation and enjoy it with us. Today, we are going to talk about a couple of new movies. Reminiscence, which is on HBO Max, and The Protégé, which is only in theaters and not apparently...
like a freaking rumble.
Not apparently in English theaters over in Great Britain. So
yeah, still holding a grudge after 250 years. No, we can't do much, but we're going to make sure you see all of our movies a week late.
I don't know why that. I just don't understand it. I don't know why. I mean, obviously there's some strategy, right?
Like, make more money.
Is it going to be a week later? Are they just not releasing it there?
So when I did a bit of research, it was actually going to be called something else entirely. It was like The Assistant or
The Asset.
Yeah. The Asset, that was it. So it is coming out. I couldn't even dig out a date for when it was happening. The only logic I can think is competing. So maybe there's things that are... Maybe there are English films that are coming out that it doesn't want it to compete with, but...
I don't know.
I can't think of any in this case.
Yeah.
It may have just been to specifically wind me up. Which kind of makes me feel a bit better.
Sure, yeah.
Makes me feel special.
Yeah, as long as it's about you. You know, as long as it's about you, we're going to be all good. We're also going to
It doesn't even have a release date for UK or Ireland.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to do Best Ever Sam Jackson movies for the Best Ever Challenge. He's been in a few movies. He's worked
several,
a bit.
In fact.
He's worked a bit. That was one of the first things when I really started logging my letterbox and pretty much caught up with all my letterbox stuff. You can see like which actors you've seen the most. And he was like top of the list easily just because he's in so much stuff.
He's just in the background. He may not even have a line. He's just, oh, Samuel L. Jackson's in this film.
Definitely true for one of mine where he is in it the bare minimum that you can technically count it for.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course we'll do some buried treasure as well. But let's kick it off by talking about, The Protégé.
Cool. See you soon.
Bye, Ian.
You can always think on your feet anyway.
Not so much tonight.
We sent away so many prematurely. Either by my hand or through you.
We never sent anyone away who didn't have it coming. We all have to pay for our sins eventually.
Meet you downstairs in the bar and her. Your rolled up sleeves in your skull.
Rembrandt and Anna, two world premiere assassins who share a mysterious past from Vietnam, traverse the globe competing for high-profile contracts. But when Anna's mentor is murdered, she and Rembrandt must form an uneasy alliance and return to Vietnam to track down his killer. The Protégé, which I believe is only in theaters. Stars Samuel Jackson, who we just mentioned, and Maggie Q kind of at the center of this thing. Andrew, what did you think? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay?
It's interesting because there are parts of this movie that I love, but there are parts of this movie that I was just so let down by. So I'm going to go with just middle of the road, okay.
Yeah, I'm in many ways, I'm right there with you. I had fun at times. Like, I was having fun at times during this movie, but I'm right there with you. I think I'm going to land in, I think I'm going to go right down the middle as well. I was going to say high side of okay, but it feels wrong. Yeah. It feels like I'm giving it too much credit if I go high side of okay. Yeah. And if I go low side of okay, I'm like, well, I had enough fun that I can't really do that. So yeah, I think just okay. I think it's just an okay movie, you know, and that happens sometimes.
It's a shame.
I think that's worse than not liking it. That's a horrible review for a movie.
Well, it's
not
like, it depends. It's not,
it's not that everything in the movie is just meh. It's a combination of really good stuff and really bad. So it evens out. Like I'll go ahead and start. Like when we're talking about things that are really good, holy crap, Maggie Q is just phenomenal. The way she is. Just gorgeous, and I don't mean that, you know, just physically. Yes, she is physically beautiful, but the way she carries herself, the way that she, you know, interacts with people, she is just stunning in this movie. She is easily like the best part of this movie,
right? Like, she has a real magnetism and charisma to her. That I agree. I that was one thing I watched this movie. I was like, oh, Maggie Q is an action star, like, she really can be. I really dug her as well.
Yeah. Actually, I think that most of the like the big names in this movie are good at what they do. Like, I think Michael Keaton is good. I think, you know, Sam Jackson's, you know, good. I'll just go ahead and say it. For me, the thing that keeps this movie down is the fact that the whole why of the story, you know, why we're watching this movie, isn't that good. It's such a lackluster, why do I care? But yeah. It's these actors being so charismatic and charming and good at the, you know, the action is good too. But the why am I watching this movie is so bleh that it just, it keeps it from being a good movie.
Yes, it's messy in that way, right? Like there's like, yeah. the plot is messy, the character work is messy, there's things happening with the Rembrandt-Anna relationship that's messy, that yeah. is very confused. Like I found myself, I think I said in my Letterboxd review, I found myself tilting my head a lot like a confused pet. You know, like how your dog will get confused and go, huh? Like I feel like I'm just yeah. like, what? Like, why
are you
praising
me? Are yeah. you punishing me? Why is that?
It was a really strange experience for me because I'd have moments of like, oh, I'm loving watching this movie. And then there'd be 20 yeah. minutes of, why did you make that decision? Well, that relationship doesn't make sense. That character would never do that. That, you know, yeah. that, you know, I don't know. It was just, it was fun mixed with messy. And it was hard to take the overall product as something that could be recommended, even if there are parts, and there are parts that are really fun and clever, and I don't even just mean action. There's some dialogue. There's some, you know, tête-à-tête, yeah. repartee that is fun and interesting and clever. You know, there's a bookstore scene that I really, really liked. But, you know, you go from those parts are from a movie that you want to watch, and then there's just so much from a movie that you're just sad you're watching. So,
yeah. The way this movie wraps up is so bad. The yeah. ending of this movie is atrociously bad.
Yeah.
Which, it's weird because you think Martin Campbell, you think, oh, I'm going to be sitting down to watch an amazing movie, you know, because, and this is like kind of his wheelhouse. It's not exactly spy, you know, like James Bond or mm-hmm. anything, but you can definitely feel in parts of it where you're like, okay, yeah, he knows how to cast, you know, like a lead, you know, like, and he knows how to shoot a lead. You know, like, there are moments in this where you're like, Maggie Q is just as charming and debonair and cool-headed as James Bond is, you know? And mm-hmm. it's from a different perspective because she's an assassin, not a spy, but that charm and charisma is still there. And you're like, yeah, this is Martin Campbell's wheelhouse. He knows how to do this. But then there are parts of this movie where I'm like, I don't get it. There were parts of this movie where I was confused as to, like, I don't understand the motives behind what this particular character is doing.
I'm not gonna spoil any actual moments from the movie. This may be considered a minor spoiler. If you want to fast forward to the next review, I totally understand. Or, you know, a couple minutes or whatever. I get it. But I'm just gonna go ahead and say it. There's a romantic relationship between the Maggie Q character and the Michael Keaton character that comes out of nowhere and feels so forced and yeah. inauthentic. And, you know, she has this almost father-daughter relationship with Samuel L. Jackson in this movie. And Samuel L. Jackson is the same age as Michael Keaton. He may be a year older, maybe two, but they are both pushing 70. You know, yeah. or in that range. And, you know, and she's, you know, in her early 40s. And it's just like, it's barely half plus seven, you know, like it's barely in that that range. And listen, I'm not trying to age shame or anything. Love who, you know.
Yeah, you
like,
are.
Okay, maybe a little bit. But I'm not, that's not my point. My point is that, you know, isn't that you can't have successful, you know, what do they call them? Winter spring romances or whatever they're called. I don't know. It's not that that can't be a real thing. It's just that we've seen it so much this way in the past, and it's started to feel ickier and ickier because it is such a like male centered idea of how the world should work. And
yeah, isn't it slightly creepy that it's very rarely gender swapped the other way around?
Yeah, and I love Michael Keaton, and he is you know, sexy in his, you know, like he's using fun words and clever words. And like, I get that he can be attractive. I'm not saying he's not attractive. I'm just saying I would like to. Well, and more than that, it steals agency from the Maggie Q character in some ways that I think are, you know, can be powerful. So I think the movie winks at giving her agency in this situation, but it still can come out feeling a little strange. And I don't know. It was the weirdest part of the movie for me. And I think the movie would have been so much better without it. So much better without it.
I think going off of that, the age thing didn't really bother me as much. It was the clashing of character, character motivations, the clash of character motivations that whenever it did come to that romantic element between them, I was like, yeah, you obviously, this is a no-brainer of like, will they, won't they, you know, get together, fall in love, you know, have a fling, like, it obviously, you're forcing something that the script painfully is trying to say. No, correct. You shouldn't do this.
Yeah. If you're going to pull that off, yeah, you better really have the chemistry be there. The only movie I can think offhand that pulls it off is Out of Sight.
Out of Sight.
And speaking of Sam Jackson movies, you know, where it's like, yes, you know it doesn't make sense for them to be together, but you also know that they are fire together. You know what I mean? Like, it really pulls off the chemistry angle of
That's the movie that does it.
Yeah.
But what about Entrapment? Perfect example. Come on.
I feel like I myself might be being entrapped at this very moment. Yeah, sure it does. Anything else, Andrew? Do you have anything else you wanted to talk about?
Besides no post-credit scene, I would not mind seeing more movies in this world.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. It's because she is so good.
Correct.
She is that good.
Correct.
That you would be happy, but without, you know, getting much into the movie itself, I'm curious how, if they were to continue with this possible franchise, where it could go from here.
Yeah. You know? The phrase I was looking for is May-December romance. I couldn't figure that one out, but that's how I've heard it phrased before, May-December.
Honestly, I thought you were going to go with cradle robbing. I thought that's what you were going with.
No. It's different. It's different than that. I mean, you know, it's... Anyhow, we don't need to continue down that line. The only other thing I would say is Michael Keaton looking like he's back in Batman shape in some ways. You know what I mean?
Like, okay, that I was actually going to say that, but like when we were talking about how good the action is, I'm like, okay, Batman.
I know.
Okay, Bruce Wayne.
I genuinely was like, who knows how big the part is, but it's you know, common knowledge that he is in the Flash movie as Batman. I'm excited for that. And this movie made me like, I hope it's actually a lot in the movie as Batman, because he was an incredible Batman and he's kind of killing it here. So way to go.
Literally.
So yeah, I had a moment where I was like, I'm just gonna pretend this is a Batman movie.
Yeah. No, honestly, while watching this movie, and people could say, you know, oh, it takes you out of the movie whenever you have a thought about another movie while you're watching a movie. But like while he was like, you know, fighting and stuff like that, I'm like, okay, good on you, Michael Keaton, for being like knocking on 70s door, that you are able to do this kind of choreography that was impressive. Like, yeah. I would have been, you know, just as happy seeing, you know, Jason Momoa or, you know, who else is like a big name right now in like action movies. But, you know, like, you know, any younger. Yeah, Jean-Claude, yeah, no, John Cena, you know, any of these younger guys who were, you know, doing all this, Michael Keaton was kind of like, oh, wow, I did not know you still had that in you. Kind of the, I guess you could say the Keanu Reeves, you know, element. I know he's younger, but you're like, oh, Keanu Reeves can still do all this at his age? He's immortal, you know? So, yeah, I totally agree.
I did not, however, think that it was a Terminator movie when I saw Robert Patrick. That thought did not cross my mind. Not that he's
Robert
terrible
Patrick
in this, but
is
he's
aged.
He is definitely playing a different character than than the T-1000 or whatever.
He's playing that cliche character that you hate seeing in every single movie.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're right. You're right. It's very cliche.
Without getting into who he is, but like once you see that stereotype character, you're like, ugh, you serve nothing other than exposition. That is your character. Like you to explain what the other character needs to know so they can move on to act two, you know?
Yeah. What do you think? You gonna recommend this to anyone?
Yeah. I think so.
Hearty recommendation from Andrew.
If you want to see a good like action movie that doesn't just don't pay attention to the story, just to see, you know, Maggie Q be amazing and Michael Keaton kick butt, sure. But if you're wanting the next amazing Martin Campbell movie, this isn't it.
Yeah,
you have to know what you're recommending and who you're recommending.
Yeah,
it to.
My recommendation would be to wait, wait till it's like available for rental or something like that.
If it's on Netflix or if it's on TV for free, yeah, check it out.
Yeah, you might want to check it out. Because there is some fun stuff in there. One thing we didn't talk about, I'll just mention this as my one last thing. There are some story turns in this that feel very forced and did not work for me. So just a heads up on that. There are some
jarring.
Some very jarring story turns toward the end. All right.
There we go.
Ian, you want to talk about a movie that you've seen?
Yeah, whatever. Guess so.
All right. Fair enough.
Absolutely, I do.
Did you have any questions about the protege first?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Nah, based on what you said, absolutely not. Was Sam Jackson in the film? you didn't mention him at all.
He is in the movie. Yes.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Cool.
There. That's all I'm going to answer that.
You know what? To go off of that, I think the chemistry between like the father daughter element between him and Maggie Q was really good.
I think it worked. Like, absolutely.
There's a moment where they're like exchanging gifts and stuff like that, and I like genuinely felt the emotion coming off of those scenes. I'm like, this is good chemistry right here.
Yeah. I think at the end of the day, what you want to make sure and say when you say how mediocre this movie is, it is not Maggie Q's fault. She is, if anything, carrying this movie. The authenticity she gives to those scenes with her and Sam Jackson are so real. She's killing the action. Like, yeah, this is not Maggie Q's fault for sure.
No, it's the script that doesn't live up to her.
I agree. Totally agree.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to Reminiscence.
When the waters began to rise and war broke out, nostalgia became a way of life. There wasn't a lot to look forward to. So people began looking back. Nothing is more addictive than the past.
No, put me back. I understand.
She's moved on, and you should too.
People don't just vanish.
To find where she'd gone, I had to know where she'd been.
Nicholas Bannister, a rugged and solitary veteran living in a near-future Miami flooded by rising seas, is an expert in a dangerous occupation. He offers clients the chance to relive any memory they desire. His life changes when he meets a mysterious young woman named May. Reminiscence is on HBO Max and in theaters. Let's start with you, Ian. Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay?
Firmly, confidently, and liked it.
Oh, okay.
Right in the middle of liked it.
What about you, Andrew?
Yeah, I'm going to go liked it. Okay. I have issues with this movie, but there's enough here that I can say I liked it. Mm-hmm.
I am on the high side of okay. So it doesn't sound like I liked it quite as much as you guys. I had a very similar reaction to this movie as the other one, where I was having fun and enjoying parts of it, and then I'd have parts where I'm like, what? So it was a very similar experience for me, but a little bit better, I think, than The Protégé, as far as I'm concerned. Ian, we'll let you, since you haven't had much to say. Yeah, talk about this movie.
This movie's trying to do a lot. A lot. And mm-hmm. I think, I'm going to say for the most part, I actually think it does it well. So the world building is fantastic. It doesn't spend too much time bogged down in how we got to where we are, but enough context for the story to make sense. And then after that, it's conspiracy, it's love story, it's dealing with trauma or not dealing with trauma. And it doesn't do a particularly good job of seamlessly interweaving those themes. I would have been much happier if this was 45 minutes shorter, picked one theme to run at. Probably memory would have been the one to focus on, and just ran with it and did that. It felt like the action was fantastic, but for me, it felt like it was in there because it was expected, not because it was needed. Up and down throughout the whole film.
Yeah, yeah. Andrew, what are some of your thoughts?
So this movie is primo world building. The world that this takes place in is fascinating. It makes you want to know so much more about how the world got here.
Yeah.
To its own detriment, to the point where you realize the story that's being told isn't as interesting as the world it takes place in. Because I'm finding myself going, the whole motivation between these characters is, for me, less entertaining than finding out more about the world. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm like, oh, I want to know more about this. Oh, we're moving on with this lackluster story. That's okay, fine. You know, that's not to say performances are bad. They tried to tie it in, yeah. That's not to say performances are bad. Actually, I think that people are giving some really good performances in this movie. Not that the script is... It's them carrying a kind of, like with The Protégé, the performances are carrying a lackluster script. Mm-hmm. You can definitely tell Lisa Joy, who was one of the producers or the director and writer of this, you can definitely feel, because she was the creator of the Westworld, mm-hmm. that's going on HBO. So you can definitely feel her fingertips, and it kind of feels like she walked up to her husband, Jonathan Nolan, and said, "Hey, babe, I really liked Inception. Can I try it?"
Well, and Memento, to be honest.
And Memento, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely a Nolan aura on this. I do want to be careful because it is hers. It is not theirs, and it's, you
sure,
know,
but you can feel
the shadows and the echoes of, and that's, you know, that makes sense when you are with someone a lot. You talk about the same things and kind of see world and in the same way. Speaking of SeaWorld, this was
that was top level, top tier stuff.
I loved that part of, really, I think it's almost what makes the world building so spectacular is how intently it goes after what would a world where the oceans are rising really have to look like, mm-hmm. and what would that do, and how would that affect the poor and the rich, and what would have to be built, especially on coastal cities, and what would be abandoned, right from the beginning, this movie is doing great world building. I agree with both of you on that.
It's a better Purge film than most of the Purge films.
That's I think that's a fair point as well. Yeah. I also really enjoyed a couple of the performances. You mentioned that you enjoyed them too. I'll just specifically just say Hugh Jackman is great. He's just,
yeah.
I just totally believe him. And Rebecca Ferguson, I thought was really good as well.
I think Tandy Newton is actually underused in this movie.
I do too. Like, and I wasn't going to go into my negatives
she's not
yet.
The focus.
Tandy Newton is not my negative. I'm not saying that. However, she is an example of something this movie does. She is an example of this. I'm trying to think who the other... Cliff Curtis is an example of this. This movie wants to be neo-noir so bad that it almost comes off as parody at times. And I think that's partly in the writing. I think it's a little bit in the direction. And therefore kind of trickles down to the acting as well. I think Hugh and Rebecca, to me, are the ones that rise above that. And everybody else seems to kind of be locked into that unfortunate, you know, and it may work for some people. Like, people who love noir films more than I do may actually love that part of this movie, but I just felt it was a little too on the nose, and it almost bordered on parody for me at times. So
there was a... I think this movie would have worked better if it was a noir kind of...
Like, just fully embraced it?
If they fully embraced it, I think that this movie would have been so much better. I don't know.
There's a lot of ponderous narration. Like, I mean, it really does.
I was about to say that, yeah.
It really does go for it. You know, and then she walked into my life. And, it was
a rainy day in September.
But, you know, whenever you have a movie that just fully embraces that, you know, mentality, you give yourself to it. And you don't realize, you don't really, you don't notice the pandering to that type of style. There's a movie by Catherine Bigelow called Strange Days. It came out in like 95-ish. It reminds me a lot of this movie, where it's people putting on chips memories that they get to revisit. So whenever I saw this, and that movie is really leaning into the noir. And that's what I thought this movie was going to be. But this movie... was way more interested in the world building, which I enjoyed. Not only the world building, I should say that. Like, yeah, the world building is great. The way the movie is shot, the cinematography that shows this world is really what is just a standout. There's a shot in this movie, I'll say, where a character is falling in water with a piano. Just to say that. One of the most beautiful shots. Like, it is so gorgeous. Leading up to that moment, though, there's a fight scene that is one of the most painfully, awfully choreographed. Like, it looks so choreographed. Like, oh, okay, you're going to throw your punch. I'll put my hand up here. All right, now I'm going to throw that, and I'm going to do a punch now, so you make sure you duck. And after that, that's when I'm supposed to jump back. Whoa! And now I'm going to try and tackle you, and you throw me. And it looks so painfully, you know, like, it didn't look real at all. Therefore, it just took me out of it. Like, I didn't care about, you know, who was going to, you know, come out on top, because it was just so laughably bad.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you on the visuals. That was the other big positive I wanted to bring up, was that this movie is more than occasionally beautiful. And it really understands how the colors work, how the framing works, lighting. Like, it's a really gorgeous movie at times. And that is to the movie's credit. I also really liked... and this may be one of the too many themes that you're talking about, Ian, but there's something this movie does where you suddenly realize it's kind of about watching movies in some way. Like, the movie itself is a metaphor for how we invest in stories. And that may have been my favorite thematic thing about this movie. But it doesn't feel completely fleshed out. It doesn't feel... like a whole. It feels more like a piece, but it's there, and I wanted to at least mention that I did find that interesting and clever and kind of fun.
That's the theme that I wish they'd focused on. That's the one that I would have picked out. Cool. Yeah, you need a love story, fine, but I think there's a way of doing this through exploring more memories and more. If we have, I mean, there's only three or four people's memories that we actually see. If it was more like a revolving door of people, and he somehow has to put the story together, instead of going Jason Bourne, he has to go more Bruce Wayne and detective.
Well, you know what it reminded me of was Rear Window. There are some moments in this that feel very Rear Window, where you're like watching a story and wondering where you are in the story, and yeah, that was kind of one that jumped to mind that I would have liked to see more of.
Is the ending to this movie?
It's terrible. It's the worst thing.
Disappointment.
It's the worst thing about the movie. It's an absolutely
Switch off half an hour early and be.
I think that's
and
what
that's
the,
a better ending.
Literally, the movie is telling you to do that the entire time because you know how many times does Hugh Jackman and Rebecca Ferguson go?
Tell me
a story, but stop it halfway through.
Yeah.
Listen, I got it the first time you said it. I knew what we were doing. We all did. We got it. You didn't need to say it three more times. Like it's just like. The once
Big
may sign. Have been too much.
But I do have a massive, massive blind spot when it comes to Hugh Jackman, and I really had to sit down and really write out my thoughts and think, do I like this film because of Hugh Jackman, or is this a film that's worth liking? And because he's so good.
He really
is. He just commits 100%. Oh. It doesn't matter. He may have his own opinions about the script and the story itself, but that man commits, and you cannot not watch what he's doing.
The scene where he literally walks into the visualization of a memory is so heartbreaking and emotional. Like for me, that is the peak moment of the movie. Where I'm like,
I agree.
You want a moment in the movie where I care about the characters and care about what's happening. That's the scene, but it's a scene. Not the whole movie.
Yeah.
Like, and the only reason why I care so much is because Hugh Jackman is just turning it up to 11 in that moment where I'm like, oh, I want Hugh Jackman to be happy, not the character. I just want Hugh Jackman to be happy.
It's that determination. It reminded me of Prisoners and the determination that his character has in that film as well. Probably equally sketchy in his methods as well, but. You want him to win.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say this about Hugh. I think he's underrated. I know a lot of people love him. I know he's well received and does a lot of stuff. I think as an actor, he should be in the conversation. Like he should be in the top five actors working today conversation. Like and I think the reason he isn't has a lot to do with the Wolverine thing. I think it has a lot to do with him doing musicals. And what I would say to that is that makes him a better actor.
It's
not
he's
a worse one.
Yes, he's more diverse.
If
how
you were
dare
ever
he
to
pick
do
things that are fun to do?
Sometimes
Logan
the game I
the
play.
Musical, you know,
sometimes
I
the game I play is when I'm thinking about like who are our greatest actors, right? And just to be clear, when I say actor, there's no gender on that. That's, you know, just our greatest actors.
Yeah.
Who are they? And the game that I play is, could this person, other person, have done all the roles that this person did? You know, could Leonardo DiCaprio have done Wolverine? Or, you know, the P.T. Barnum movie? You know, like...
Greatest Showman.
Could, you know, Brad Pitt do The Greatest Showman? You know, could... Hugh Jackman do Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and like, and
ooh,
you start
I
to go,
see that movie.
That's right. You start to go, Hugh Jackman could do that, but Brad, I don't know that Brad Pitt could pull off the P.T. Barnum thing. It. So, like, it's just for me that is a level of to me
that
means
that
something.
I think musicals in and of just playing devil's advocate. I think that musicals in and of themselves. Require a different type of actor, you know.
Sure.
And I'm not sure. I'm not sure Leo could do, you know, Greatest Showman.
That's the point, though, isn't it?
That's what I'm
Leo's
saying.
Leo's not diverse enough to do that, but Hugh is just like, yeah, gimme, I'll do it.
Well, I'm saying that there comes a physical talent to singing that not everybody has.
I mean,
and that's what I'm getting at.
Brando did a musical, right? Like he wasn't the greatest singer. In Guys and Dolls, right? He was in Guys and Dolls, but he did it, and he was serviceable because, you know, he tried to stretch himself that way. I don't know. There's something there. It's the same argument I use for Jim Carrey sometimes. Who else could be Ace Ventura? Could Brad Pitt, Hugh Jackman, could they do Ace Ventura? No, but that doesn't mean Jim Carrey's a better actor than them. It just means he's better in, you know, that kind of situation.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about being better in more situations, that's what I think Hugh Jackman is. I think he's so flexible. He can do the serious dramatic role and also do, and he can do comedy. He has done comedy, you know? So like it's interesting to, you know, to see him do all these things and still just kind of fly under the radar. And she's like, yeah, Hugh Jackman's good. Instead of, no, he's one of the best.
Yeah, it blows my mind how we're not.
No,
we're
I'm
not
with
there.
You on that front. Yeah.
Yeah.
He is, he needs to be in that conversation.
So, anything else? Any other things you wanted to mention about Reminiscence?
No post-credit scene, but I'm actually still going to recommend this movie, even though I think we've talked a lot about the flaws in this movie, but I think that there's an inherent beauty to this movie that should not be missed.
Yeah, I agree. My one last thing is, don't think too hard about the technology in this movie. Just let it go. There's the second you start thinking about how any of the technology here works, it's going
to
get a little frustrating.
The fact that they didn't try to explain it did the job for me. So I was like, okay, this wasn't something you're interested in explaining, so I don't need to know. That's fine.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. Going with the parallel of Inception, you know, Inception explains the rules throughout the movie. This goes on the other spectrum of not explaining anything.
Yeah.
So, but the technology in Inception, they don't spend a second explaining how it works, just like this. It's just,
but they explain
it's
the rules
it's a
of how it...
right.
Yeah, the rules, you know, of how it works in the dream world, which this film does as well. It explains roughly how you can interact with your own dreams and come outside of your body-ish. Yeah.
Memories, not dreams. Memories.
Memories, sorry. Sorry.
Yeah.
I will say the technology in this movie did get me thinking about once you understand memory or brain activity as data, how possible it would be to revisit the data in your memory. It's interesting to me to think of what technologies could actually exist in the future. And this is one I'd put in the maybe category. You know, like that seems like something, if you can figure that out. I mean, I don't know how we all don't go insane at that point, but but yeah, it does like seem like that's one that at least would be in the maybe category.
As soon as we make holodecks from Star Trek, it's game over. It's whatever productivity and will to be in the outside world exists, gone.
We talk about batteries. Talking about technology that we would want to see, I think holodeck is number one.
It terrifies me because yes, it is, but also no, it isn't.
Yeah,
Why? Because of all the malfunctions that happen in all the holodeck episodes in Next Generation.
Yeah, there's absolutely that, but it's the fact that if it works is more scary. If it works perfectly, like why would you leave?
Yeah, yeah. No, I hear you.
Why would you?
All right, let's move on from Reminiscence. Let's leave it as a memory in the past. We are going to talk a little bit about the CivPop members before we head on to our best ever challenge. Thank you so much to those who support what goes on at CivPop here on the podcast and at the website by giving at Patreon, patreon.com/CivPop. You can look at all the details there. At one level, you get ad-free podcasts, including the bonus episodes. We mentioned we're talking about the TV shows we're watching this week in the bonus episode. Another level has a monthly video hangout where we just kind of hang out and talk about whatever you want to. And that's a lot of fun. Enjoy that one. And you can check out all the other ones as well at patreon.com/siftpop. We appreciate you. If you are a CivPop member, we appreciate you. If you're not a CivPop member, but we would appreciate you going and checking out being a CivPop member. No, Ian, no. Everybody is appreciated the same. Same value. Yeah. Same value as a human being. Again, the website is patreon.com/CivPop. All right, let's move on to the best ever challenge. We're doing best ever Sam Jackson movies. Big list to pull from. In fact, I only included, even in my honorable mentions, I only included movies in my top 200 of all time. I didn't go beyond that just because, you know, we could be here all day.
honestly, I decided this week I wasn't going to do any honorable mentions because the breadth of his work is so expansive that I couldn't choose, so I was just going to let you guys go.
I hear you. I do have a couple, but yeah, I have seven movies that he's been in that are in my top 200 of all time. Actually, I have more than that, but I eliminated a couple based on they are in the same series. So like I only picked, you know, one of a certain series as opposed to picking a few. Let's just say Marvel. He's been in a lot of Marvel movies, and there are a few in my best ever. So let's start with number five. We'll go to number one. I will kick us off. My number five is Out of Sight. Already mentioned that one. We already talked a little bit about it and kind of some of the you know, the idea of the relationship and how that works and the absolute fire chemistry between Lopez and Clooney.
It's the epitome of sexual chemistry.
It is. The sexual tension in this movie is insane. And, you know, Soderbergh, I've talked about this recently because I actually just saw this for the first time recently when I was knocking off some of my list of shame. And I'm a huge Soderbergh fan, more now than ever after watching more of his movies and catching up on some of them. I think he just knows how to tell stories really, really well. And this is one of his favorite genres, heist. You know, he loves him some heist stories, and this is one of them. So anyhow, if you haven't seen Out of Sight, because it's a little bit older, I would highly recommend seeking it out and checking it out because it is is great.
Not only that, we got to mention how funny this movie is, too.
Sure. Yes, please do.
It's a hilarious movie. George Clooney is an underrated comedic actor. Mm-hmm. I think that he really pulls off that and he just doesn't get the love for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and then you've also got Albert Brooks, who obviously is hilarious, and he's great in this. So, yeah, Catherine Keener. Like, there are funny people in this movie to go along with it. So yeah. Steve Zahn. Yeah. It's full of funny people. It's no surprise that it's really funny. Should I just keep naming people? Luis Guzman?
Yeah.
Also very funny.
Just bring up the IMDb, just keep naming people.
One of the things I noticed going back and watching Soderbergh movies is he really did, pick actors that he loved working with and kept putting them in his movies. One of those was Viola Davis. Like a lot of her
first roles.
A lot of her first stuff is in Soderbergh films, including this one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyhow, I thought I'd mention that as well. But yes, Out of Sight is one of my favorites. Andrew, what do you got at number five?
I'm going to go with the movie that literally has every single person from Hollywood in it, and that's True Romance. I mean, I'm just going to really quickly list off the cast of this movie. Christian Slater, Patricia Arquette, Dennis Hopper, Val Kilmer, Gary Oldman, Brad Pitt, Christopher Walken.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Ken, Sam Jackson, Michael Rapaport, James Gandolfini, Tom Sizemore, Kevin Corrigan, Michael Beach. I mean, every single person who was ever in a movie ever was in this. Directed by Tony Scott, written by Quentin Tarantino. This is one of my favorite movies ever. Actually, like Aaron, every single movie on my list is in my top 100 of all time. This is just a fascinating story told in a ridiculous way. Kind of like you want a fun romance story that has great action. We were talking about with Reminiscence. It's nowhere near in the same tone, obviously. This definitely feels like a Tarantino movie. Actually, if you were to tell me that this was actually directed by Tarantino, I might have believed you, but you can definitely feel his fingerprints all over this movie. It's funny, it's emotional, it's intense, it's wild. It's wild.
I probably haven't seen this movie in 20 years.
Really?
I probably need to revisit it. I remember thinking it was... So the time I saw it, I was even like, I know this is going to surprise you and people are going to be blown away that this is even possible. I was even more averse to violence in movies back when I saw this the first time. And so that probably put me off this movie quite a bit.
It's a violent movie.
But
it's Tarantino, so it's a violent movie.
Right. But I do remember thinking, oh, that's clever. That's fun. That's interesting. ooh, gross. So, I do need to revisit this. I would love to revisit this kind of in more my modern movie mindset. So, yeah.
It's one last thing I'll say about it is you have all those actors that I mentioned. 75% of them are cameos, but they are cameos that stick with you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think Gary Oldman is doing blackface in this, but his character is like right on the border of is he doing a black character or not?
Right. There's definitely some like icky cultural appropriation
going on.
Yeah.
But it's intentional. It's not like mm-hmm. they were like you're like, oh, this is uncomfortable, but it's supposed to be uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Brad Pitt has a cameo. Christopher Walken has a horrifying cameo. 75% are cameos, but they're cameos that stick with you. You definitely remember them. Highly recommend True Romance.
What do you got at number 5, Ian?
I'm expecting to be trumped, but Avengers Assemble.
Avengers Assemble, is that the...
Nope.
The English title for the Avengers?
Wait, did you not... How did you have it then?
Just the Avengers? Are you talking about the first one?
It was... Yeah, the first one. So this was Marvel's Avengers Assemble was the full title over
interesting.
Here.
Interesting. It's just Marvel's The Avengers.
I thought you were doing an animated movie.
Yeah, I was like, I don't know this one.
It's just the Avengers over here.
Yeah, and I guarantee it wasn't called The Avengers because we have the Avengers already.
Maybe that's why. Maybe because of
the one with Ralph Fiennes and Uma Thurman. It was a TV show.
Yeah, but it's based off of the original. Yeah, exactly.
That's what I'm going off of. Yeah.
Ian, let us tell you about what it's like in the UK. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm gonna America-splain for you for a second.
Thank you so much, colonists. Please continue.
Technically, Marvel Avengers was before the show, though. So
That's true.
Give me a date.
It would have technically been 50s. So
okay,
fine, whatever.
Anyhow, yes, I will trump you on that. I will trump you on that.
Fair enough.
All right.
The blank stare from the pair of you was terrifying. I was like, "Wait, no, I'm like, did the MCU not exist? Am I misremembering?"
MC
what parallel
what now?
World have I been living in?
MC yes. what? What are you talking about? I know about the DCU. That's been so successful and like you know, it was on its 20th movie and
yeah.
The MCU, what is that? Anyhow, my number 4 is possibly going to get trumped. This is where I have Jurassic Park. Number 4. All right. Andrew, what is your number 4?
This might get trumped up. Actually, you know, we're just going to trump each other. Sam Jackson movies, you know.
That's right.
Number 4 is where I have Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, Trump.
All right. Okay. All right. I guess we're to your number 4, Ian.
So for my list, I was very strict in that this isn't a bit part from Mr. Jackson. It has to be something that he's a bit heavier in. So I may not have the best movies of all time, but I've got Shaft at number 4 because I love this film. And not the new Shaft, the 2000 and that's the wrong Shaft. Why do you do this to me? No, the OG Shaft, not the OG Shaft.
It's a guilty pleasure movie.
Is it 99? Something like that.
It was like 2000, yeah.
Man, I love this film so much. He is Shaft. He is. And it's such a quotable film. Most of the quotes I can't say on this show. But
he's the man.
Whenever somebody chucks something at me, it's like, throw something else. Do it.
Yeah.
Who's your man that plays Peoples? Mr. Wright. He's the Watcher in Marvel.
Jeffrey Wright
in this film is
when you said Mr. Wright, I thought you were talking like R-I-G-H-T. So like.
No. I mean, there's an argument to be made, but he's playing a character that you'll never see in any other. You'll never see him do in any other film. It's a comfort movie. It's not good, but I love it.
Well, there you go. Shaft nice. In at number 4 for Ian. Ian refuses to play by the rules. He wants to make up his own rules for the best ever challenge. Hey, I respect that. Listen, you are playing by the literal rules. You are just putting extra. You're putting extra, you know, guidelines on yourself. So I
an extra fine. Layer. I like to make it difficult. I don't want to have fun.
Listen, as long as you don't mind us saying, oh, so you like Shaft better than whatever other movies we're going to talk about. You think that's a better movie?
Better than the Avengers, apparently, you think according Shaft to my is a own list.
Better movie than the Avengers. Okay. All right. Hey, you do you. All right. On to our number threes. This is where I have the Avengers. And I think it's going to be there at number C. It just says the Avengers, Ian. It does not say Avengers.
I can see. Yeah. Imagine that.
Yeah.
It was called The Asset over here originally.
Oh, yes.
This is continues to be, I think, the best Avengers movie. And I know so much of that has to do with my nostalgia. I totally get it. I know, Andrew, you disagree. And I really can't argue with you. I understand there's so much more that happens in Infinity War and Endgame. And they're so much bigger and so much more meaningful. But they even in those moments, even in the Mjolnir moment, even in the, the portals opening, all that stuff, Avengers Assemble, none of it was to the level the first time I watched the Avengers and the very first time they teamed up in the city streets and, Iron Man shoots
a
laser
around.
Off of Captain America's shield and Hulk jumps on and it's just this incredible, and I just... The euphoria of that moment in the movie theater. This is actually happening
smash.
And it's actually so working. Good. And it's just like, it's just, again, nostalgia. I get it. It's the first one. And that's why, but yeah, it is my favorite. And so that's why I have it at number three. And you had it, Ian, at number five?
Yeah, at number five. It sucks
behind
that we
Shaft.
Can call it nostalgia. Shut up. It sucks that we can say it's nostalgic because it shouldn't be. It's not old enough to be nostalgic, but it is. It absolutely is. I think the difference between this and Infinity War and Endgame is that we haven't replicated this camaraderie. The last third of this film is the differences have been put aside. They've teamed up and it's just fun. There's no baggage. There isn't the weight of 18 other films behind it, and we've got to tie up this loose end. It's just a very simple get the bad guy story, and here's some unimportant bugs that you can swat and show off your powers. It's brilliant. And Samuel Jackson in the role as Fury was it's great. Just like that line. Until such a time as the world stops spinning, we'll act as if it can... just the way he delivers his lines as Fury is fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. I love it. All right. So I think that brings us to your number three, Andrew. Is that right? Yeah. What do you got?
Well, the correct answer for the best Marvel movie is Avengers Infinity War. And that's what I got at number three.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, I'm joking when I say I don't fault you guys for having the original Avengers. I get because of what it did and what it birthed, if it hadn't worked, the MCU would have stopped right there, but I think whenever we're talking about actual story moments and actual feelings of dread and fear for our characters, the first time I ever felt that was in Infinity War. Because yes, I love Avengers. It's one of the goats. It's in my top 100 of all time. But I never felt afraid for any of the Avengers in that one. The way Infinity War starts, you're like, oh, okay, so we're just going off of, these two pretty important character deaths immediately. I think going into Infinity War, people knew this was going to be a different movie from anything that we'd ever seen the MCU do. And, we were right. I think that Endgame has more, spectacle wow moments. Mm-hmm. But I think as far as, actual story arcs and, story progression, I think Infinity War is the best movie. They could have just called it Thanos. That's what they could have called it, Avengers Thanos.
Yeah.
And
or Thanos Infinity War.
Yeah, or just called it Thanos and don't make it an Avengers movie.
Mm-hmm. I think there is an easy argument to be made that this is the best Marvel movie on a technical level. Like, as far as like cinema, film, telling a story, beginning, middle, and end. And I actually know many people disagree with this. They think this is half a movie, and we've had this argument before with other reviewers. I 100% disagree. I think this is an absolutely complete film. And I think it forces you to reconcile the complete story you just saw. On a technical movie making level, I have no problem with that argument that this is the best. Again, I admit that my favoritism has a lot to do with nostalgia and euphoria. I think this is easily argued to be the better movie. In that way,
I think the argument that people make when it comes to Infinity War is that they know, everybody's coming back.
But so what? I don't get that argument.
The characters don't know,
right?
Just because the good guy doesn't win at the end doesn't mean the story isn't complete.
Yeah, is Empire Strikes Back a half a movie? Just because the Empire wins in that one, and you're like, oh, then I will say though, playing devil's advocate. Endgame feels like a part two, whereas Infinity War feels like a full movie.
Yeah, so, I can see that.
Yeah, but no, I think on a, like Aaron said, a technical level, a performance level, I think Thanos is one of the best movie villains of all time. Now it's impeccable. He feels, and you want a good villain, the villain has to, believe what they're doing. And is not evil. Like, they feel like they're doing the right thing,
I think the easiest argument to make with somebody who's like, they're all coming back, like, it doesn't mean anything, is how did you feel? How did you feel when Spider-Man said, I don't want to go? Like, how did you feel during that moment?
Mm-hmm. Oh, we know Spider-Man's coming. Why'd you have to do this?
No, I think it's the best example of going, so what? Yeah. You know they're going to bring Spider-Man back. You know they're going to make more Spider-Man movies. It doesn't matter. That's terrifying and traumatic. Yeah. And
I don't know what's happening.
For the characters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And for us, because we feel for the characters. Like, that's that empathy.
He's just a kid.
Yeah, yeah.
And his spider sense is kicking in before he actually goes, and that's why he's the only one who can feel it.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, why are you doing this to me?
I just think that's a very simple way to, at least have evidence that it really doesn't matter if you know for marketing reasons that they're bringing characters back. The story is the story.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Anyway. We did a full review on Infinity War.
How could you not?
All right, so I think that means you're number three, Ian. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm going to look like an absolute movie idiot again. Die Hard with a Vengeance. I'm sorry, I love this film.
I like this movie. It's a great movie.
I love this movie so much.
It's a great movie.
I like it better than Die Hard 2. I watch it more than Die Hard, even though Die Hard is the better movie. Die Hard with a Vengeance is just, it breaks the format a little bit, but in a lot of ways it doesn't. They're still confined to a location. I love it. I think their relationship is fantastic, and how few Fs he gives is just fantastic. Mm-hmm. Stop calling me Jesus. Do I look Puerto Rican to you? Like, it's the lines in this film are just, again, super, super, super quotable.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it.
There you go. Die Hard with a Vengeance. No, hey.
Aaron.
Yeah, go for it. Let your film flag fly, man.
I'm amazed you didn't trump me.
Hey, honestly, I'm not going to give you any flack. I love this movie. It's so fun. It's a fun movie.
Apparently I need to watch this one again. I don't remember like hating it or anything. It just was like, oh yeah, there's another fun Die Hard movie. It didn't like stand out to me above the original in any way. But again, I haven't seen it in a while, so I should probably rewatch it. All right, so on to our number twos then.
Yep.
I have Unbreakable at number two.
Anybody? Trump.
All right. Damn it. It's a miracle.
No. Not that one. Not that one. But,
oh, okay.
But Ian trumped it anyway. So what do you got at number two, Andrew?
Okay, I'll say this. If you guys veto this one, then I'm going to move Unbreakable to my number five.
Okay, fair enough.
I'm going to go with Inglourious Basterds.
No, I think that's fair. It's fine.
He narrates it.
Yeah. I rejected it from my list for that reason, but it's fine.
I had it in my honorable mentions. It was one of the two in my honorable mentions. He is in it. He is in it.
For about 6 minutes of narration. But yeah, he's in
that's
it.
That's all you need. See, Andrew, you understand. You understand the assignment.
Oh, good. Let's just highlight how little I understand this invented game.
No, I think that Ian understood the rules, and he just defiantly
just
stood his ground. Like,
could be argued. Could absolutely be argued that you are better at the best ever challenge than us. Yes.
Yeah. I don't know what else can be said about Inglourious Basterds that we haven't already said 100 times.
You know, it's my favorite type of Tarantino, which is the revisionist history, you know, thing that he likes to do. I think I find a lot of to associate myself with him in that. Whereas something like what was the Western one he did?
Hateful Eight.
Hateful Eight. I just go, I'm out. Like, but when it's something where I'm like, oh, I see what you're doing here. You're using movies as a way to rewrite history. Like that's really interesting to me. So. And of course the performances.
And this movie introduced most of the world to Christoph Waltz.
Mm-hmm. That is true. That is true.
Yeah. That's my number two.
All right. Ian, what's your number two?
This is where I've got Pulp Fiction, but I'm sure it's somebody else's number one.
No.
No?
Aaron doesn't like
it. I thought someone trumped it.
You trumped it.
Oh, no, I trumped it. Man, I'm really not getting this game, am I? Like, which one of you jerks trumped this? And yeah, Pulp Fiction. I like this movie a lot. I have a lot of the same issues with Tarantino that you do, Aaron, but I like this movie. It's good.
I get it. I understand. There's a creativity to this movie, too, that is really smart. Like, you can watch this movie and go, oh, a genius made this. Like, it has that kind of structure and ability to not just tell a story or non-linear.
Linearly,
yeah.
I'm sorry.
But don't even have them relate to each other, really. They still stay quite separate.
But not only do that, but do it in a way that brings the audience like an emotional through line to this movie. Mm. It's really astonishing work on that level. I just don't connect to it in any way, shape, or form. So I have nothing to hold on to through the genius. And that's, you know, that's kind of why I land there. But no, you guys love it. And Andrew, it was
my number four.
Your number four. Yeah. So it was Andrew's number four, your number two. Yeah. Go ahead. Talk about it as much as you want.
It has ruined cinema slightly because there's so many films that I noticed doing the conversational thing that John Travolta and Jackson do in the car about. Cheeseburgers and Quarter Pound. Mm-hmm. So many films do that and either miss the point, put it in the wrong place, or just do it wrong. And Spiral does it. That's a bad movie anyway, but it does that particularly poorly. And it is
frustrating. Chris Rock is doing a stand-up routine or something. Yeah.
I see what you're doing, but stop. But this nails it, and it's so bold for Tarantino to do it this early in his career as well, and just like, nope, I'm going to make something that you've never seen before, and you're going to like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Honestly, I think that this movie would not have been as good if it had been told linearly, because it's that recollection of moments where, like, whenever Sam Jackson and John Travolta walk into the diner, and you're like, I totally forgot about Tim Roth and Amanda Plummer, you know, like, you know, Honey Bunny and Pumpkin, I think is what they were. You totally forget about them because that's how the movie starts, is with them. And it's how it ends. Yeah. You know, it's such a brilliant way. You could see he was working with that, you know, in Reservoir Dogs when his first movie, whenever he did that. But I think he perfected it in Pulp Fiction. And it's just a masterclass in storytelling. It really is.
Very nice. All right, moving on to our number ones.
Yep.
My number one should be no surprise to anyone. I have The Incredibles at number one. Where's my super suit? Yeah, I love this movie.
Tell me why my suit is woman.
There's so much I love about this movie. We don't have the time. So just piece together all the many times I've talked about this movie and how much I love it. And you can go from there. But yes, one of my favorites. Andrew, what do you have at number one?
Jurassic Park.
Yeah, I had it at number four.
It's in my top 15 movies of all time, so it had to be number one, unless, you know. Yeah, it's perfect. And it's funny, on my list here, whenever it was either last week or the week before, I was talking about how I just finally read the book and how different the book is from the movie. Mm-hmm. And but it made me go back and watch the movie. And it's just, I don't know, it's a perfect movie. It's a perfect movie. There's the laughs, there's the fear, everything. It's one of the first movies I actually saw in theaters too, which is not something I'd recommend, you know, for a young child.
How old were you when you saw it? That would have been
93. 93? 86,
yeah. 86, 87, 88, 89,
99,
102, 96.
So I was seven.
Ah, yeah. Yeah. That'd be scary. For sure.
It was really, really scary. The kitchen scene, or when the T-Rex first breaks through the fence. It's such an epic story. And I'm going back and I'm reading a lot of Michael Crichton. Like I said, I just read Jurassic Park. Last week I read 13th Warrior, which is Eaters of the Dead. And right now I'm reading for the first time Andromeda Strain, which is great.
Yeah,
I'm really enjoying Andromeda Strain. But he had a way of telling stories that I think only Spielberg really knew how to adapt, you know, to the screen in that way. Like, I don't think I can think of any other director who could take Jurassic Park and tell it in a way that would have not only done fans of the book, you know, justice, but also, you know, and I say that in a way of, you know, telling a completely different story, but you're not going to have people, I don't think I'm ever going to run into somebody like, yeah, I like the book better, Jurassic Park. No, nobody's going to say that. It's because it's a perfect movie, you know? It's a spectacle that there are a few movies I can say help define me as a person. Jurassic Park's one of them.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's
it has to be number one.
There you go. I had it at number four. You had it at number one. Ian thinks Die Hard with a Vengeance is a better movie than Jurassic Park.
And Shaft.
I mean, can we just take 10 to 15 minutes to dissect Samuel L. Jackson's cigarette smoking role in this film?
And yes.
How profound a performance it is.
Man,
and how much it contributes to the story.
How, I mean,
he let that cigarette get all the way down to the filter.
I mean, I don't know how you eliminate the hold on to your butts line. It is probably the key to the movie. So yeah,
yeah, I mean, the film isn't the same if you pluck him out of it. It's not the same movie.
It's true. Yeah. You make a good point, Ian. Ian, what do you have as your number one best ever movie that Sam Jackson was in?
So I have The Exorcist 3.
Nice.
No, it's Unbreakable.
They're alive, damn it. It's a miracle.
Yeah, Unbreakable.
Yeah, no, that's
it's my happy place.
It's my number two. It's so good. Number one. Actually, I think surprisingly enough, that would probably be put it as our best average of all these.
Yeah, it's because I'm right.
Because yeah. No, I have no problems.
Like I said, it was my number six. It was my number six. So I have no qualms with it being our group pick. I love this
movie. It's the first time this was a random pickup. This was, I don't know, 15-year-old Ian picked this up somewhere randomly, having no idea what it was. Just, I like Bruce Willis because Die Hard with a Vengeance is a great film. I also like Samuel L. Jackson because Die Hard with a Vengeance is a fantastic film. So I'm going to watch Unbreakable. And yeah, it's the first time that I'd seen him play a bad guy. But a bad guy that's so vulnerable. Like, literally, just flick him and he's you've defeated him. He's done. Brilliant. Just a fantastic film.
Yeah. No, I agree. I am an overly enthusiastic M. Night apologist, and a lot of it has to do with, I think, many of the things people love about Unbreakable, Sixth Sense, even Signs, which are the three that most people agree are great movies. And then we can argue about The Village and some of the other ones. But the same things they see as as successful in those movies still exist in a lot of his newer films as well. It's just we have, I think many people in a viewership sense have moved on from that sensibility. If you compare Unbreakable to Split, especially, and you could throw Glass in there as well, though Split, I think, is the better example. Mm-hmm. Tonally, they are the same. Yeah. Like it is pretty incredible the stuff he is doing in both of those movies. But here it was new. Here it was fresh. And I think people kind of got both tired of his shtick once they kind of got it. Once it was like, oh, this is what he does. And also a little bit of his perceived arrogance, you know, as a filmmaker. And so I think that kind of led to a lot of his downfall. Also, he made a couple really, really bad movies. So that'll do it,
too. Yeah, that doesn't help, does it?
Can you
imagine that feeling that he must have been feeling when Split came out? Because mm-hmm. I don't know anybody screamed from the rooftops that this is a prequel to Unbreakable. I mm-hmm. don't know if a single person in the world guessed it. Imagine sitting on that and just waiting for the world to explode.
I could there be wrong. There are people wrong. Who
got pre-screeners.
I think that's what I was going to say. I think this screened like months before it came out, and people were
thank
told,
God I finally get to talk about it.
Yeah, people were told you cannot.
That's hard.
So yeah, I think there were a lot of people keeping the secret.
Because it only takes one person to not care. It's a miracle that it wasn't spoiled.
Thank God they didn't, because then I wouldn't have had one of my favorite movie-going experiences.
Yeah,
that was with Aaron. No, they didn't.
You did not just do that. Yeah.
Legendary response.
Yeah.
It is easily my favorite. Not Split.
Yeah.
Unbreakable is easily my favorite Shyamalan movie.
Yep, I agree. I think he is at his best here, and I really, really like it as well. So
it's a great comic book movie and a great movie about comic books.
Mm-hmm. All right, so there are our top five. Andrew, you didn't pick any honorable mentions. The only one
I'll throw out one, but after you guys go. So
okay, the only one that I wanted to throw out was Do the Right Thing. I think that definitely deserves a mention. It's just an incredible film.
Such a good movie.
So I wanted to mention that one. Ian, did you have any honorable mentions you wanted to throw out there?
Yeah, Coach Carter nearly made it onto my actual list.
Okay.
I just really enjoy that film.
Sure.
I enjoy what. It's a much more subdued performance. I like the story. Coach Carter just caught me on a good day, I think. I just really, really enjoy that story. It's a very subdued performance from him. I think it just caught me on a good one. It's not one that he's really known for, but yeah, I really enjoyed it.
I think Coach Carter is a fine movie. Yeah, people don't hate that movie, do they? I think people.
No, I just don't think anybody talks about it.
Yeah,
it's
you're right.
It's one that's been went and was completely forgotten about. Other than that, he was the sat nav in Locke. Not many people know that, but yeah, did a great impression in there because he's just in every movie.
Wait, what?
What are you talking about?
Wait, seriously?
That was a Samuel Jackson's in everything, but he isn't actually.
Oh, I see. I see.
My honorable mention list was nearly exclusively things that. He could have been, but you didn't know.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Yeah, because I was like, I'm pretty sure there's only like four people in Locke, and I think I would have remembered seeing Sam Jackson's name.
It's just more impressive that he still made his way in there. He was one of the four.
He's laying in the back
seat
the whole time.
Keep going straight!
He plays his father in the back seat that whole time.
The whole time. All right, Andrew, what else did you want to throw out?
I'll throw out Incredibles 2 because I think it's better than Incredibles 1.
Sure. I understand that. It's a great movie.
Wow.
All right. Wow. Let us move straight from the Owen Wilson impersonations into our buried treasure for the week. What is that one thing in any area of pop culture that you want to make sure people know about? Ian, you're the guest, so you go last. Andrew, why don't you go first?
I'm going to go with an oldie, old show on you can watch on Paramount Plus, Ink Master, if you didn't know. I like tattoos. I got one or two or ten. And this is just a fun show. I don't really watch it for the competition element. I just really enjoy looking at the art that they do. I think it's beautiful, and I think it's interesting. And watching the show can open you up to different styles of tattooing. Like, in case people aren't really aware, there's a lot of different styles. There's traditional Japanese, you know, there's modern, there's geometric, there's traditional, American traditional, new age. It's just really cool seeing all the different art and like how some people specialize in color and some people specialize in black and gray. So yeah, seeing that, and I think it's just really fun looking at the art. And each week, you know, they have to do a new tattoo, but they give them like it has to be within a certain style, and that's where you really see, like, oh, this person's really well versed in how to tattoo and stuff like that. They can do it all. And some people are like, oh, they only specialize in one thing, and it's a shame. The thing that makes me the most mad about this show, though, are the canvases themselves, the people getting tattooed, because they know they're coming onto a show and that they have to get tattooed in a certain style. And the canvases are always annoying, like, oh, yeah, today's a American traditional. Cool. I want a big old Japanese dragon tattoo on my back. They're like, then, like, first of all, I only have 5 hours to do a tattoo. I can't do a full back piece in 5 hours. And second of all, that goes against what the challenge is today. Yeah, but I want a big old dragon on my back. And you're like, where do you get these people who are ruining, like, if you're going to be on a show getting a free tattoo, they get free tattoos. You have to be willing to get a tattoo of whatever the challenges of the day, you know? And the canvas is really...
I'm really surprised at that. I would imagine the canvases came in blank, as in, yeah, you're going to get this for free. You're going to be on TV. This is roughly what you're going to get, but you've just got to be okay with it. Because I have a friend that loves tattoos as well, and he just goes in and says, I am a canvas. Whatever you want to try, do it to me. So it can't be hard to find that person.
Yeah, nope. There are some people who they are just adamantly annoying when it comes to being a canvas. Yeah, so, but it's a fun show, and if you have Paramount Plus, you can watch every single episode, which I am almost done with all of them.
There you go, Ink Master on Paramount Plus.
Yeah,
I'm going with an old movie that I checked out. I have made my way into the 80s. I'm going through a list of movies that people have told me to watch, are considered classics, that kind of stuff that I haven't seen. And this movie is going to surprise many, many people that I would even want to talk about it. But it is called Xanadu. Have either of you watched Xanadu?
I know it by reputation. I've never put myself through it. No.
Me too, right? And I am not going to in any way, shape, or form say that this is a phenomenal film. This is not a great movie. However, boy, do they go for it here. Like, this is an acid trip of a film. And, like... It is, but at the same point, it does make sense. The story makes sense. I understand exactly what the themes are in the movie, what they're talking about with, you know, art and creativity. And it is one of the most, this is going to sound it is an insult, and I don't, but it is one of the most, like, well, I'm trying to think, I don't even know if it's offensive to call something like hippie-ish or, you know, like there's, this is idea of, like, you know, freedom and peace and, you know, like, this movie just embraces it and is just like, we're going to do a musical where it's all about just embracing creativity and how rock and roll and, like, swing music from the 20s are really just the same thing in different eras, and we're going to combine them, and people are going to roll around on roller skates and wear amazing outfits, and, like, people are going to come out of the, like, you know, be art on the wall, and it's just, I don't know.
Yeah, I have an entire animated section of the movie.
Yes, yes. And I just, I watched this and I was like, this may actually be objectively terrible. I don't know. But I am like, I'm caught up in it. I'm caught up in it. I don't know if it's the thematic, you know, the optimism of it. It felt very optimistic in a lot of ways. Being, you know, a creative kind of person, like I identified with the idea of where inspiration comes from and pursuing art, even when it feels, you know, pointless. Like, I don't know. There's just some stuff here. And of course, I like musicals. I mean, the music is nothing to write home about. Like, there's no song in Xanadu that I come away humming or going, at least after the first time. Maybe if you watched it several times. I did watch it and go, you know, there's a different universe. There's a different timeline where this is like Rocky Picture, you know, or something like that, where people are doing midnight viewings of this and singing all the songs and laughing, or The Room even, you know, like a, you know, it's just not quite that bad that you would kind of get that kind of, you know, so bad it's good kind of thing. I don't know. I was surprised by at least how much I was compelled by it, if not enjoying it. So anyhow, Xanadu is the one I wanted.
I forgot about this movie until you mentioned it. It's like one of those things where your mind tries to, you know, erase horrible memories, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And
sure.
Would this be the thing that you would have to relive and have burned into your consciousness? Yeah.
Because honestly, I thought that Singing in the Rain was the first Gene Kelly movie that I'd ever seen.
Nope.
Apparently not, because I'm looking at the cast list right now, and Gene Kelly's in this movie.
He sure is. And it is really interesting to see him in this. He's obviously much older, but he is specifically perfect for that role because it is a movie that wants to combine the history of what it means to be performative and be a performer and artistic. And, you know, he's playing somebody who played in swing bands, you know, and back in the day. And so, yeah, it's, I don't know. I really respect the cross-generational idea of this movie. Because there's so much, understandably, of my parents don't get my culture, right? Like, that's just, we all have been through that, right? I say we all. I actually, you know, I listened to music from my parents' era when I was growing up because I loved it. But that's just me. But for the most part, you understand, like, I want something new, that not what my parents listened to, you know, that kind of thing. And this movie has the gumption to go, but what if all music is beautiful? And what if creativity is about more than just, you know, individualism and, you know, your generation? What if it's a through line of history? So anyhow, it's probably...
Has anyone ever spoken more deeply about Xanadu? The answer is no.
I don't know. It's all right there, man. I bet somebody's written that article somewhere.
You want to talk about a buried treasure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This was in the Marianas Trench of buried treasures.
And it just depends on how you define treasure. It's like, you know, it's like we went down to the bottom of the Marianas, you know, Trench for this 1982 penny. And it's like, but anyhow, maybe you like the 1982 penny. I don't know. Xanadu is my buried treasure. Ian, what do you got?
I have got Star Trek Lower Decks. Again, maybe I'm breaking the buried treasure rules because this isn't buried. It's brand new, but enough people are watching it. This show is perfect. It allows us to have all of the Star Trek callbacks and all of the nostalgia all of the Star Trek fans can focus on this and allow Discovery, Picard, and the other shows to do their new things and tell new stories. And there are new stories in this, but this is primarily fan service. I'm contradicting myself a bit because it does do new things. So it focuses on not the main crew, not the captain, first officer,
the red shirts,
all of the department heads. Yeah, it's all the people on the lower decks. It's all the people that do the jobs that you necessarily don't want to do, although I would do any job in Starfleet, I think. And it's on a ship that isn't the flagship. It's doing the cleanup missions and the stuff that isn't glamorous. But it's hilarious. It's full of references. Full of nods, great voice cast. I love it to bits.
Yep.
Where can people watch it? Because I'm going to start.
So it's on Paramount Plus for you guys. In the UK, okay. It's on Amazon Prime a day later.
Okay.
Okay. Well, I know where I'm going to watch it.
Yeah.
That's right.
There you go. You know what I didn't do was look up if Xanadu, where Xanadu is streaming.
Cinemax.
Is it?
Yeah.
Did you just make that up or did you look it up?
No, I swear it's on Cinemax.
Oh, okay. All right. All right. Cool.
Which you if go. You have, there's a premium version of Hulu. It comes with Cinemax. So you can watch it there.
There you go. So there you have it. Lower Decks on Paramount Plus. Xanadu on Cinemax. And what did you have, Andrew? I didn't write it down.
I had
the Tattoo
Ink
people.
Master,
oh, yeah,
which
Ink
is on,
on Paramount Plus.
Which is that's on right. Paramount Plus. Yeah.
So there you go. Ink Master's on Paramount Plus.
I'm glad
Plus
it made
well.
An impression on you.
It did.
Yeah, just zoned out for all of that.
If there's anybody who I would be more shocked in the world if they ever got a tattoo, it would be Aaron. So I could see why that one just kind
of... You know what's funny is I was going to, after we finished recording, we'll just go ahead and put this in the show. I was going to ask you to recommend somebody because I have been looking since my wedding ring broke at getting a wedding ring tattoo. And so I was going to ask.
Okay.
It's a very simple thing. Like, I feel like if I went into a tattoo place, most places would like laugh at me and, you know, because they want to do something more complex, but...
Yeah, that's the bread and butter for them. Roses and wedding rings. Yeah, I don't think that'd be
so. Good. Yeah, I was going to ask you where I should do a consult at or however it works. I don't know. Maybe I can just walk in and get it done. I don't know. I know I'm going to be in a lot of pain because finger tattoos hurt a lot, I've heard. So we'll
not as much as foot tattoos, I imagine. Foot tattoos are horrible. Hurt so much.
I will avoid the foot tattoo then. I will think twice about the...
Yeah.
The... Lower Decks tattoo I was going to get on my my lower deck.
Nice.
Congratulations, guys. We did a podcast. Congratulations to all of us. We deserve all the praise and glory for accomplishing such a feat. Thank you so much for joining us today. For Sif Pop, it is part of the Studio DNA Podcast Network. You can find out more about other shows on the network at studiodna.media or by searching Studio DNA in your podcast player. Huge thanks to Andrew for showing up again today.
Thank you, buddy.
Big thanks to producer Phil for producing the audio and video show.
Thanks, Phil.
Thanks to Drew for providing some visuals to go with the video show. And thank you to Ian for coming and hanging out with us again today. Ian, anything you want to tell people, promote? Where do you want to send them to? Sorry, to.
Nice. I'm going to be shortly publishing How to Do the BEC Properly. You'll be able to find it in all of the best retailers. But no, you can find me on Twitter at @galactic_Dave. That's where I'm most active, especially if you're a fan of the Star Treks, because come find me and we will talk about how great everything is.
Ian is always embracing his role as the heel. If you want to support what goes on at SifPop, you can do that as a member at Patreon, patreon.com/SifPop. Support starts at $3 a month. And you can check out the different bonuses to each of the levels there. Lots of ways to help us out. You can leave a comment, a rating, or a review at Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. You can email us at feedback@siftpop.com. And finally, if you're having a good time, your movie-loving friends will probably like the show too, so make sure you let them know about it and that listening is much easier than making out with a hologram. We will be back next week with Respect and Candyman, I believe, are the two we're going to do next week. So we will see you then.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.